We are now joined in studio by Uachtaráin Sinn Féin, the leader and president of Sinn Féin, Mary Lou McDonald, TD. Mary Lou, thank you very much for coming in to talk to us this lunchtime. An awful lot to get through, but we'll talk with the one thing which is perhaps most pressing for Sinn Féin, which is the general election for Westminster this coming Thursday. 18 seats north of the border. Sinn Féin currently holds 7 of them. Obviously, you're trying to hold as many of those as you possibly can. It's very difficult not to look at this election through the lens of Brexit and what the people of Northern Ireland feel about Brexit. What is the case to be made for electing a Sinn Féin MP who will not attend Westminster to materially affect Brexit, as opposed to someone from another denomination who would actually go there and potentially be material when it comes to votes?
Well, you're right, Gavin, to say that this election is about Brexit. And, you know, there's a very strong sense and understanding in the North that this is, in fact, the election of a generation, because Brexit changed everything for everybody. It's changed the political landscape very, very profoundly, to such an extent that people are being asked and actually have a willingness to support, to vote for candidates from other political parties or traditions that they would never, ever have considered before. And it splits down along Brexit and Remain lines. Mm-hmm. And the DUP, of course, were not just champions of Brexit. They were architects of it from the get-go. And I think there is a moment of reckoning for the DUP in many constituencies, not in all, where people want the opportunity to reassert loud and clear again that the North hasn't consented to Brexit. 2 years ago, our 7 MPs made a set of commitments to the electorate. They said that we would do everything we could to ensure no hardening of the border, to ensure full protection of the Good Friday Agreement. And we have used every platform available to us, not just to assert that cause, but to ensure that that message has been heard loud and clear acted upon.
Well, you haven't literally used every platform, but of course it's a stated thing that, of course, when you elect a Sinn Féin MP, you don't expect them to use the parliamentary platform. But we've seen very potently in the last couple of years how the parliamentary platform in Britain can be used to try and very potently change the Brexit agenda. So the question remains, why would someone elect an abstentionist MP who chooses not to use that forum, given that Parliament can be so potent?
That's a fair question. And leaving aside, I think, the obvious position of principle as regards the border, but leave that aside for a moment. I actually think the last number of years have demonstrated, again, very loudly, the fact that Westminster doesn't deliver for Ireland. It's not designed to do that. If you want to get into a numbers game, you look at the fact that there are 650 MPs elected. Of that 650, well in excess of 500 of those represent English constituencies. Westminster is, to all intents and purposes, an English parliament, and it's the place where the British state has to figure out its Brexit position. Now, they've made a hash of it. Mm. It's been chaotic and dysfunctional. But that's what they're at. There is a majority for Brexit, whether we like it or not, in England, and that's not going to change.
Don't participate because the numbers can never be salient.
No. It's not just that. It's don't go down a cul-de-sac or a blind alley that's not bringing you anywhere. I mean, the protections that have been achieved for Ireland have been achieved well away from Westminster. Scotland has MPs that do attend, and they have told me, and they would tell you happily or sadly, the frustration that they feel at the fact that Westminster cannot and won't deliver for Scotland. There's no backstop for Scotland, despite their active participation. I was told by commentators and experts for a long time that the DUP held all of the cards because, of course, they do attend Westminster. And not alone that, they were in a confidence and supply arrangement with the Tories. But when push came to shove, the DUP was very smartly set aside when the Tory party judged that English interests, as they assessed them, had to come first. So the story, and this isn't a new story, this story is centuries old. Irish MPs don't shape or fashion the position of the British state. At best, Ireland is an afterthought. And in the case of Brexit, Ireland wasn't a thought at all. But in any event, our MPs have held to our pledges and we have delivered the agreement that's on the table now, erroneously referred to as Boris's agreement. It's not Boris's agreement. It's the agreement that has been landed on between the British state and the European institutions. And it's not perfect, but perfection was not on offer. It does contain the baseline protections, the bare minimum that we require for this island to keep the lights on.
You hold currently 7 seats of the 18 for Northern Ireland. That is every nationalist seat that there is going. You're going to be under severe pressure to hang on to some of those seats, not least in Foyle, where the SDLP want a seat, which has historically been held by their party. Having currently held all of the nationalist seats, if you come out on the other end of Thursday not holding them all, would that feel like a little bit of a loss? Because I know in the last couple of years, you and your party have made the case that the nationalist people of Northern Ireland have had their say. They want nothing to do with Westminster. But if the nationalist population elects, at least in one or two seats, people who are going to participate, that must feel like a step backwards for you.
Well, obviously, we go into the election to defend all of the 7 seats that we hold, and each of them will be a challenge. I mean, some of them are referred to as what would be called safe seats, but, you know, in politics, the biggest mistake you can make, as you know, is to assume that any seat is safe. So we've set out a very strong platform. As I said to you earlier, this election is different to previous elections. So, for example, in the case of South Belfast, we have stepped back. We're not fielding a candidate there because we believe that the SDLP candidate, Claire Hannah, is best positioned to win that seat. I think she'll win that seat. And Claire intends to attend at Westminster. I would prefer that she didn't.
How do you
that's
feel
her,
about that?
That's
that on one stand, your own candidates are saying, well, we won't participate. But on the other hand, then you have stood aside in favour of candidates who would, including in one case, I know she's not running now, but in one case, you stood aside in favour of Sylvia Harmon, who doesn't even represent your community,
yes,
let alone.
Well, she represents an Irish constituency. She is a unionist. The SDLP, in turn, have stood aside in North Belfast, where we're fielding John Finucane. And I think John Finucane has a strong chance. It'll be very, very tight, but a very strong chance of taking that seat. And of course, the same dilemma arises for the SDLP. That debate, to attend or not attend at Westminster, isn't a new one in Irish politics or Irish nationalism.
Nope.
It's a century old or more. And it's still a matter of debate amongst people who share a common view in respect of Irish interests and protecting our island in the face of Brexit. And I think what has been different about this election is that politics, the politics of standing together in common cause, has trumped, if you like, the differences, the very clear differences that we have. But to answer your question, I want us to hold the seats that we currently occupy. And we're out. I've been out on the stump, as your listeners can hear from my rather raggy voice. We've been out talking to people. And it is, of course, a challenge. But our activists and our candidates are out on the ground working very, very hard. I couldn't ask more of them. And the debate is being had on doorsteps. And it's a really, really invigorating, it's a really, really energetic campaign and debate that's happening right across the 6 counties.
You mentioned standing for a common cause. Of course, as soon as this general election is out of the way, there'll be a renewed round of talks to try and get the Stormont institutions back up and running. Has Sinn Féin evolved from any of its previously stated positions? Is it still an absolute red line that you would need a standalone Irish Language Act, or you'd need assurances around the provision of gay marriage and abortion, for example?
Well, we're back in talks on the 16th of December, so we have been up and at it. The negotiating team under the leadership of Conor Murphy, our chief negotiator, have been assembled. Contact is ongoing with both governments. So we're ready and we're in to do a deal. You've heard me say before, Gavin, that a deal is possible. That's always been my position. I think the heavy lifting has been done on all of the issues. The Irish language is one of them, but there's issues around legacy. There's an issue around a mechanism that's called the petition of concern.
Yes, yeah.
You'll know this because you like the
detail.
Where
an individual community can exercise a veto irrespective of whether the majority in Stormont.
Exactly. And that's a built-in mechanism to protect minority rights, but it's been abused to actually deny rights. There's also an issue now ongoing around the state of public services in the north, which have suffered very, very grievously after 9 years of Tory austerity.
You just said that the heavy lifting has been done on the Irish language. What heavy lifting has been done? Do you believe that there is the bones of an accord on that subject?
Oh, absolutely. I believe that what has been lacking has been political will.
But your partners in the DUP would be prepared to get on board with whatever accord you believe
you
have.
The DUP were distracted, fixated, immersed in the politics and the shenanigans of Westminster. They prioritise being on the green benches in London and participating in heated discussions rather than actually focusing on the real bread and butter politics and needs back on the island of Ireland. Because you asked me about Westminster earlier on, If there is a democratic gap that needs to be filled quickly, it's not in London, it's in Belfast. We need those institutions of government back up and running.
But just the
and they have to deliver on the basis of inclusion, respect, things that are good for every community and every
But
citizen.
What does that look like, that just because you specifically said the heavy lifting had been done when it came to the Irish language? Do you believe the DUP, despite the deal we thought we had nearly 2 years ago, which turned out not to be a deal, do you still believe that the DUP can get on board with Sinn Féin's requests, demands on that, a standalone Irish language?
Well, what the DUP need to get on board with, and I don't want to use language that begs, you know, an argument on the side before we even get into the round of
But just
of,
when
of
you
talks.
Say the heavy lifting is done, it would imply that you believe that effectively the settlement is already there.
Well, the heavy lifting has been done as far back as the St Andrews Agreement, the Stormont House Agreement. Many of the issues that remain to be concluded now are actually things that had been agreed many, many years ago. Mm. So in a sense, this is about delivery. So everybody needs to get on board now to deliver the things that Northern society needs. All of the parties and the two governments. And what we need is political will. Political unionism has to decide that it wishes to be part of power sharing in its fullest sense with the rest of us. And I think that would be a very positive step forward. I hope it can happen. I believe it can happen. We're ready to make that happen. And yes, I believe a deal is possible. And in fact, just to remind your listeners, February 12 months ago, we actually had an accommodation that I thought was reasonable, that it was sufficient. But at that stage, the DUP walked off the pitch.
There were some signals from your party between now and February 12 months ago that you believed that basically you'd run out of road and you needed some sort of direct intervention from the governments, and that there was some other sense that nothing was going to get done until the Brexit issue had been finally squared off. And the longer that the Brexit impasse dragged on, potentially now to the end of January, if not later, that there'd be no prospects for getting Stormont up and running. You clearly seem much more optimistic about it now.
Well, I think Brexit and more particularly the DUP's engagement at Westminster and their relationship with the Tories make things incredibly difficult, because you can only lift the institutions and get them back up and running again if you have a partner in the enterprise. We can't do it on our own. And the DUP clearly put all of their eggs in the Westminster basket. Now, that has come back, I think, to haunt them. But aside from that, that's a matter for themselves to weigh up. The more important thing is that we now need a focus at home. We need a focus on Belfast, and we need a real determination to get the institutions back up and running again. Look, I believe that the issues can be resolved. I believe that we don't need a drawn out process. We need a decisive process. That's what we're up for. Mm. I can only hope.
So does decisive I can only hope
that.
Christmas?
Well, if not by Christmas, then certainly in the new year. And I can only hope that unionism, that the DUP are in the same space. And if they're not, I can only appeal to them in the common interest and in the common good to come on board.
Just as a by-the-by, people might forget the circumstances under which the previous Stormont fell apart. And it was a lot to do with the concerns over the RHI system, cash for ashes, it's become colloquially known. That report is due pretty imminently as well. Does the impact of the findings of that impact in any way on the prospects of getting Stormont back, or is that a water under the bridge now?
Well, no, it's not. It's far from water under the bridge. I mean, this was a very significant scandal.
But will it influence going back in again?
It crystallised the discontent that people felt with the institutions of government. But whatever comes from that report, and it hasn't been published yet, it's been delayed, or we've been waiting for it for quite some time, I have no doubt that it will be critical of certain political figures.
But will your participation in a new Stormont executive hang on that?
No, I mean, we have to provide leadership in government for people in any event. You can't allow malpractice or whatever it is described as when we finally see the report. You can't allow that be a factor which says, well, let's throw in the towel altogether. So that would be ridiculous. But we certainly have to learn from it. And any of the reforms or changes that need to happen arising from it need to happen very quickly. And any political figures who have questions to answer as a result of this report, well, they clearly have to step up and answer those.
Let's talk about another legislature where Sinn Féin does take its seats. Whether, of course, it is working or not is a subjective matter. But that, of course, is Dáil Éireann. And there is a definitive sense this week that its days are numbered, particularly in the aftermath of the motion against Owen Murphy this week. The government prevailed by 3 votes, but given certain resignations and certain positions that have become clear since then, if there were to be another vote this week or in another minister earlier in the new year, it would be a tied vote. The government will be depending on the Crown Corla, which isn't really tenable. Given that it is now no longer the sole preserve of Leo Varadkar or Micheál Martin, in those words, to determine when the election is, and you could have your own influence in that, and you've been very vocal for a long time, you want this government out at the earliest available opportunity, would you move a motion of no confidence in this government early in the new year?
Well, you know, if Fianna Fáil hadn't sat on their hands, we would be now facing into, dear listeners, a Christmas election. You know, Fianna Fáil make a lot of noise, but when it comes down to it, they're quite prepared to allow Fine Gael to continue in government. In effect, they have been in government with Fine Gael for the last 3 years.
But the numbers are such now that if there were to be another motion, it wouldn't matter what Fianna Fáil's position is.
Well, the numbers anyway are very tight, and I agree with you. I think this government is on the ropes. It's on its last legs, and an election is imminent. So what we need to measure now coming into the new year is the political climate of the day. We want an election. I want this government out. I want us to have a government that is actually responsive to the needs of people on the ground. I want a government that's serious about housing and that actually delivers. Mm. I want a government that stops endlessly talking up its own statistical economic recovery while ignoring the fact that people are still struggling to get by. People haven't seen the benefits of this recovery. So all of that needs to happen. But I'm not going to announce a confidence or no confidence motion on your show here this morning. But you're right in your analysis. Clearly, the days of this government are numbered.
I don't expect you to announce it on this show, although I would have loved if you had done
so
anyway.
Yes, of course you would.
Been very critical of Fianna Fáil for saying, on one hand, that they don't have confidence in Owen Murphy or any other ministers, and yet when it comes to the crunch, not doing anything about it through the means that they have.
Yep.
You're telling me that you don't have confidence in this government, and you haven't since day one. So I'm just asking the natural question, which is, when would you intend to do something about it?
Well, we do something about this every day that we're in the Dáil. Gavin, I think you'll notice that we have been, de facto, we are the lead party of opposition.
No, but you do now have the nuclear option available to you, which has never been available in such potent, almost guaranteed to succeed terms before.
Yes.
You now have the means through which, if you table this motion, you know you'll trigger a general election.
And I have no confidence in the government, if that's what you're saying. But I'm not on your show this morning to announce an initiative such as that. I mean, we're going into Christmas now. We'll come out in the new year. We'll take stock. There will be an election very soon, I think, into the new year. I can't, if you want my view, I can't see the government lasting until April or May.
How long will it last?
I don't know. I would imagine we've had February elections. The last two general elections have occurred in February. And if I were a betting woman, I would put my money on February. But they may stagger on beyond that. And politics is all about circumstance and events and timing. But the days of this government are drawing to a conclusion. I think we all know that. I think the public knows that. Having been out in the recent by-elections, I think there is an appetite for a general election. In fact, some people were very puzzled as to why we were having by-elections when, in fact, what's needed is a general election. So for our part now, our job is to set out our stall to the Irish people, to win as much confidence and trust as we can from the people, to maximise the mandate for Sinn Féin. I'm very conscious that that we had a very good day out at the by-elections.
Indeed.
Previously, we'd had very bruising days out. Mm-hmm. So we've learned from that.
What have you learned from that? Because I did ask you in Adamstown last week what you could learn from the fact that May hadn't gone well and some candidates did better than others last week. And you said you'd dwell on that and try to learn what lessons you could. A week removed from that, what lessons have you learned from that?
Well, the lesson is this, is that we have to very, very clearly, consistently articulate to people what Sinn Féin means for them and offers to them in the here and now, in their daily lives. So that's bread and butter politics. And I think the context of our politics has changed. You know, in 2016, you were coming off peak austerity. Mm-hmm. People knew that Sinn Féin stand up for communities, stand up for citizens.
Water
that's what
was
we
a very
do.
Potent subject,
and yeah. that's the nature of our political stance. We're not part of the cozy cartel. We're apart from that. So people have great faith in us to stand up for them. But I think the question then arose in a time when the austerity has waned. I mean, the scars are still there, but it's less intense. What does Sinn Féin offer now? So our job is to convince people in the critical areas of education, of childcare, of housing, of health, that Sinn Féin can actually advance an agenda that is of benefit to everybody. People at work who are up early, as they say, who are working hard at it and who are just barely getting by, or who are in a state of constant worry and pressure, that we can actually offer real change. And my view, and I've said this before, I think we need to look at our policy agenda for change now, not just in terms of the next election, but over the next decade, because big change has to happen, big significant social change, and we can do it. I know there's some apathy, and sometimes people feel that politics can't make a difference, that their votes can't make a difference. That's wrong. Things can change. It doesn't have to be perpetually a Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael or Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil scenario. Hmm. Other politics can actually deliver better results for people.
This brings me to the final question that I wanted to ask you, and you will tell me that it's not about you, and of course that might be fair to a point, but do you believe in your heart of hearts that after that general election, whether it's in February as you might think, or April or May as may otherwise happen, that you can come out the other end as the Taoiseach?
That's in the hands of the people. I mean, obviously currently on the current Dáil numbers, anybody looking at that would say that would be an improbable outcome. But it a lot depends on the debate, the quality of the campaign that we have. It depends on the numbers. And it's not about me, Gavin, as
no,
you know.
No.
It's not about
but if your party
whether
puts
or not
its best
Mary
foot forward,
Lou is Taoiseach.
Do you believe it can happen?
Well, best foot forward, I believe that we can come out with a very, very strong mandate that we can use very, very effectively. Best foot forward, we can put it up to the other political parties to actually deliver a programme for government that is truly a Republican programme for government. Best foot forward, we can deliver for people, dispel cynicism and actually build belief and evidence and results that housing can be dealt with, that healthcare can be dealt with. Best foot forward, we can deliver a result that sets in train planning and preparation for the constitutional change that's on its way.
I'm getting the impression
Irish
from
unity.
You that you believe all of those things can be achieved,
yes,
perhaps as a minority partner in government, not necessarily having
well,
the
they
lead
can,
office.
They can only be achieved if we achieve a strong mandate in the first instance. And they can only be achieved if the numbers fall in a way and the politics falls in a way that we actually call out the big two traditionally of Irish politics and bring them onto the ground of politics and delivery that suits regular, ordinary working people and not big vested interests. That's the challenge.
A few interesting months ahead, Mary Lou. We'll
Absolutely.
Leave it there. Thank you very much for your time. Mary Lou McDonald, TD for Dublin Central and Uachtaráin Sinn Féin.